welcome. This is Dr. Susan Call with Temple of Health Radio Show. We're pleased to have back John Boyk to discuss natural compounds and cancer therapy. John was on the program a couple of times, I think, when he had his book come out, Natural Compounds and Cancer Therapy. And he has a very diverse background. He has a master's degree in Oriental Medicine, and then he worked at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in pharmaceutical development. And he is, I guess you're currently a postdoctorate fellow of the Department of Statistics at Stanford, is that right?
Well, actually, no, that's finished up. I no longer am at Stanford, and I am now in Irvine, California, where I'm running a nonprofit called New Earth Biomed.
Great. Well, statistics was my least favorite subject, so I hats off to you for having gotten that done. It's a necessary evil, I guess.
Yeah, for me it was important because my interest has always been in looking at natural compounds against cancer, but in particular I've always been interested in mixtures. Mm-hmm. And when mixtures are not an easy thing to study, so as I was going through my PhD down in Texas, it became quite clear to me that I was going to need quite a few skills in mathematical modeling and statistics. So that's what led me to Stanford.
Well, I just wanted to tell our listeners that I've always said that your book, The Natural Compounds in Cancer Therapy, is one of the best, I think it's probably the best explanation of how cancer develops that I've ever read. So, and I recommend it to a lot of people who are interested in both practitioners and patients who are interested in exactly how cancer comes about. And I think you're right. I think that it's going to take a multifaceted approach, and probably not just with compounds, but with other things involved with spiritual medicine as well, to really knock cancer out. We have to figure out how to get the energy of the organ up so that it doesn't become cancerous.
Quite true.
As well as detox ourselves from the things that are carcinogenic in our environment. So I have a particular interest in cancer, having run the Avatar Cancer Center since it was founded in 99, and we deal with all sorts of very, very difficult cancers.
I agree. It's not just physical medicine, but energetic medicine, emotional work. They're all necessary and have their role.
Yeah, I'm sure as with your master's in Oriental medicine, you understand how Qigong has been successful in treating cancer. That's a fascinating topic.
Yeah. By the way, I thank you for the nice words about my book. I would like to tell your listeners that the book is available for free. A PDF of the book is available for free at www.ompress.com.
Really?
So
great.
If anybody wanted to find it there, that they could.
That's wonderful. Let me write that down. That's ompress.com?
That's right, www.ompress.com.
Right. Well, fill us in on your new nonprofit endeavor and your information there.
Sure. Well, since I just gave a website, I might as well start with this website. It's www.newearthbiomed.org. And New Earth Biomed is a new nonprofit in 2010. And the purpose of our organization is to develop mixtures of natural products useful against cancer. And right now we are in Irvine, California, working in a collaborative project with the University of California, Irvine, on a laser-based bioassay system that will help us test natural product mixtures more effectively. So that's our first step, and then once this bioassay is developed, then we will start and roll up our sleeves and start working on looking at hopefully we'll set up a rather large screening program to look at a large number of mixtures of compounds that could be useful against cancer.
Are these mixtures going to be tailored to the patient or the cancer or both?
In the long run, and ideally, they would be tailored to the patient. That, of course, is a difficult thing to do. It takes a lot of data to develop good models to figure out the best way to do that. So our initial efforts will be simply to choose one. We'll probably be choosing a lung cancer cell line, I think, and we'll be looking at mixtures of compounds that could be useful against that cell line. And then in later, as time goes on, then we'll try to expand that to other cell lines and then eventually to patient-specific input.
Well, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about how these compounds are discovered and where in the cancer? I mean, your book goes through, 9 steps toward metastatic disease, I guess.
Yeah. As some background, something like 77% of all cancer drugs today that are used in the clinic actually are derived or either directly or indirectly derived from natural compounds.
Mm-hmm.
And these would be compounds found in plants and trees that they were extracted as pure compounds and found to inhibit cancer in some way. And that's when usually when we talk about natural products or herbal products, we're usually not thinking of these types of compounds. These compounds that have been developed into drugs tend to be highly toxic compounds. And it's very difficult, actually, to find a useful, highly toxic compound against cancer. For example, the NCI screening program has been going on for several decades now, and I don't know how many compounds they've looked at, but it has to number in the hundreds of thousands at least.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just a few out of those, just a small handful out of all of those compounds they tested have actually looked promising to them to develop into drugs.
Mm.
Well, that's not at all the kind of screening program that I envision for New Earth Biomed. What we're interested in are compounds. We're not interested in finding a single magic bullet. We're interested in finding a mixture of compounds, perhaps even a dozen to a few dozen compounds that together have some large effect on a growing cancer. So that means that if you are using more than one compound like that, there's opportunities for additive effects and synergistic effects. And then the idea is that you could use a larger number of compounds, but use a much, much smaller dose of each one and still have a useful effect against the cancer. When I was at MD Anderson Cancer Center getting my PhD, we published a study where we looked at 10 natural compounds, and some of these might be familiar to your listeners. They were curcumin and quercetin and some others, fairly common compounds like that. Mm-hmm. I think maybe resveratrol was one of them from grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these compounds are highly toxic, and as a matter of fact, all of them are quite mild in toxicity. And none of them are super potent cancer inhibitors either. They're, I think, what I would call mild inhibitors of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But when we added them together, there were synergistic effects. And when we tested it in combination with a traditional drug, doxorubicin, which, by the way, is also derived from a natural product,
mm-hmm.
we were able to reduce the overall dose of doxorubicin by about tenfold without reducing the effectiveness of the mixture. So if that sort of thing were to play out clinically, it
mm-hmm.
might mean, for example, that some of those toxic drugs the doses could be reduced dramatically without compromising the effectiveness. And if that were true, it could have great impact on the toxicity of treatment with doxorubicin and other drugs.
Right.
So I think there's enormous potential that, as a matter of fact, I would say practically untapped potential for developing useful therapeutic compounds from mixtures.
I have an area of interest in this that is new, and I'm talking with psychiatrists and other people about it, but it's well known in psychiatric circles anyway that people with schizophrenia have very, very low rates of cancer, if at all. Are you aware of that?
I'm not.
There was an article I read by a psychiatrist who had like 5,000 patients with schizophrenia, and none of them had developed cancer that spread. Like, a couple had some minor cancers, like skin cancers and stuff. And he was proposing that there was an adenophobe in the patient that was preventing the cancer. But I have a different theory, and I want to give it to you because I think it's worthwhile. I think it's worth looking at from the natural world. I think that it is the antipsychotic drugs that have an effect, not so much in the physical realm, but maybe because they block energies coming in from the fourth to the third dimension, which we see in schizophrenia. But anything that's going to block energy coming in from the fourth to the third dimension, I think will be a potent cancer inhibitor. So while you're looking for things that have anti-cancer things in the test tube and in the, you know, in the cancer cell plate, take a look at natural compounds that are antipsychotic. You know, I'm not familiar which ones are, but you have a vast knowledge of things that I'm not aware of, you know, coming out of the Oriental and other. But I have a really strong theory that that's gonna make a lot of difference in terms of cancer therapy.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Obviously, drugs can affect the physical, and then they can at the same time have quite a energetic component. I'm not sure how you would classify it.
Yeah. Well, I study Morgellons disease. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, no.
Well, there's three diseases that have energy coming in from higher dimensions, and I think it's fourth dimensional into the third, Morgellons, cancer, and schizophrenia. And we've been able to completely block that energy and have tumors completely regress. This is with the aids of shamans. Mm-hmm. And have Morgellons completely cured, which is very rare, and have schizophrenia completely go away without drugs, just from blocking that energy.
Interesting.
I mean, the energy coming in from that dimension. And that's in the realm of shamans. You know, you have to understand that this is not something that I'm going to learn it in medical school, nor are you going to learn it in
right.
MD Anderson.
Right.
But, you know, my interest came because of spontaneous remission. I was interviewing all the physicists in the world, the superstring theory physicists and the quantum theory physicists, the most spiritually based of them. And I really felt that there was some sort of energetic intrusion coming in into an organ that's weak,
mm-hmm.
Even a bone marrow, if you're talking about, you know, leukemias and stuff is an organ. But in other words, the organ drops because of the organ energy drops because of a biological conflict. Or, I mean, some people get just a massive dose of carcinogens too, or radiation.
Sure,
there are certain physical causes, but when the energy drops in the organ, then what the shamans tell me they see is they see these energetic beings come in and actually manifest as the tumors, and then. The reason you can get spontaneous remission is that you can block this energetic thing, and then within 5 minutes all the tumors can disappear, which I've seen, and also a lot of other people have seen, and that defies physical reality, as you might understand. It just
defies it. All of that is quite fascinating to me. It's not completely unfamiliar, because going through acupuncture school, we worked with energy.
But just keep an eye out for any natural antipsychotic thing
mm-hmm.
that might be blocking energy at a level that is going to be really, really effective. That's the only thing. Because think about it, 5,000 schizophrenic patients in this psychiatrist practice, and not one had cancer that advanced.
Yeah, quite interesting.
It really is.
When we do set up our screening program, we will look at an enormously wide variety of natural compounds
mm-hmm.
in it. So I'm sure that we probably will catch some of those, and it will be quite interesting to see how they perform.
I think you'll probably have to test them. I mean, I don't know how are you going to go about testing them?
Well,
animal studies first, or
no. That would be I would just as soon never do an animal study if I could help it.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked, actually, because
mm-hmm.
it brings something else I wanted to say about our current project. I had mentioned a minute ago that we're developing a laser-based bioassay to better assess the effects of natural products and drugs
right.
on cancer. Well, there's a few reasons for that, actually. Traditionally, when you study cancer drugs in a test tube, you study them in a completely unrealistic setting. Usually, it's just cancer cells growing in the bottom of a flat plate, so you have a flat layer of cancer cells. And that's, there's no place in the body that cancer grows like that. It doesn't grow flat, and it doesn't grow in isolation of some kind of surrounding cells that are in some way networking with it. So what we're trying to do is develop a relatively complex cancer tissue almost in a test tube, where we grow the cancer cells in three dimensions in a spheroid, and it's surrounded by some normal cells that are communicating with it. And we're trying to develop a much more realistic setting in which to test these natural products.
And that way you don't have to go to animals.
we're hoping
the way
that
to avoid animals.
Yeah, we're hoping that not only can that produce results that are more, that are, have a higher correlation with clinical results, but we're also hoping that in the end it could greatly reduce the number of animal studies we might need to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You don't want to give animals cancer if you can help it.
No. No.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that there were some compounds they were coming out of the rainforest. Is that right?
Oh, that's kind of an interesting topic too. Like, where do these compounds come from?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that oftentimes when people talk about a TV show or something talks about looking for natural compounds against cancer, they show pictures of a rainforest or they show pictures of exotic places. But in fact, there's probably weeds growing in my backyard that potentially could be useful against cancer. So there's all kinds of foods, medicinal herbs, spices, and then all kinds of other plants that don't have a history of human use. All are actually candidates for having bioactive compounds in them. And another thing that I wanted to mention about these mixtures is that drugs are already used in what they call cocktails or mixtures. And these are usually mixtures of maybe 2 to 5 drugs or something like that. Again, what we're doing is quite different than that. The way they develop mixtures in clinical use now is the individual drugs go through the FDA approval process. And then after the individual drugs are approved, that is, all those drugs are active on their own, then doctors and researchers start to mix them together to see if combinations of them might work a little bit better. And that's okay, but that means that the pool of drugs that they have to use as mixtures is extremely small.
Mm-hmm.
It could measure in the dozens, perhaps, many dozens. But if you compare that against the world of the universe of natural compounds, which is almost unlimited, I mean, it's enormous at least, there are many, many, many more compounds that might not be active on their own in a traditional classification of a drug. That is, they might not be real potent on their own, but when you mix them with others, they could have enough effect to reduce the growth of a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily be looking at really strong, potent compounds in these mixtures. Some of the compounds could be relatively mild compounds that together have a synergistic effect.
And one of the ways the synergy could occur is by hitting different aspects of the pathway.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. In each of our cells, proteins are called the workhouse of a cell. All the work that's done is mediated through proteins in one way or another. Proteins might be enzymes that, for example, there's enzymes that pump drugs out of a cell, or enzymes that degrade drugs that enter a cell, and enzymes that do all kinds of other things, synthesize new proteins and. So all of these proteins, they don't act alone. They act in a kind of a very large network. They're all related in some way. And there's pathways, as I just mentioned, signaling pathways between proteins, and proteins acting in conjunction with each other to cause some effect. And the idea with using mixtures of compounds is that you might be able to target multiple pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, make it not only inhibit the cancer cell more efficiently with a lower dose of each compound, but also, very importantly, perhaps you might be able to reduce the ability of the tumor to develop resistance to the drug. That is, if you give a single potent drug to a cancer patient,
mm-hmm.
there is a definite chance that the tumors will eventually, perhaps many of the cells will die, many of the cancer cells will die, but those that are left will regrow and they will be immune to the drug.
Or even worse,
more aggressive.
Okay.
And they'll repopulate the tumor and then no drug will work against it. So, and a cancer cell might do that in many, many ways. It might develop a protein to pump the drug out of a cell.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might, if that drug is hitting a particular pathway, signaling pathway in the cell might find a way to use a different signaling pathway that so the drug is no longer effective. And there's probably at least a dozen ways that a cancer cell can become immune to a drug.
Right.
If you're hitting multiple pathways, then it's very difficult. I mean, I would think it would be very difficult for a cancer cell very few of the cancer cells in a population might be immune to all of those multiple attacks.
It's like using the Air Force, the Marines, the Army, and the Navy all at once.
Kind of like that, yeah.
Well, one of the most, I guess, difficult things to understand and then hopefully treat is the body's immune system simply doesn't react to the cancer.
Quite true.
What's going on there?
Oh, that's also, I had mentioned a couple ways that cancer cells can evade drugs. At the same time, cancer cells can evade the immune system. For example, they can learn to shed some of their antigens on the outside of on the outer cell wall, and then the immune system can no longer recognize them as being foreign. And there's other ways that cancer cells can secrete local compounds that are immunosuppressants.
Mm-hmm.
And various other ways that cancer cells can essentially hide from the immune system.
So natural compounds could be used to block that.
Sure.
Could be very powerful because our immune systems are actually it's an amazing system.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. You know, because many types of cancer cells can essentially hide from the immune system, it's probably not a very wise move to try only to stimulate the immune system to inhibit a cancer. In fact, there's some very, very strong immune stimulants that Western science has come up with, but they actually have shown little, relatively mild effects in many cancers, with some exceptions. For example, kidney cancers tend to be more effective with immune stimulants, and there's some other cancers that tend to work okay with immune stimulants. But by and large, the solid tumors don't respond. Patients with solid tumors don't respond very well to.
Well, you probably need an immune deficiency
in the patient.
It's part of the cause of the cancer before that's going to work anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with stimulating the immune system, but a more comprehensive approach would work much better. So you want to do something so that the cancer cells cannot hide from the immune system, for example. And then maybe you want to also use compounds that inhibit various protein pathways, signaling pathways in cancer cells. So that's what we're shooting for in the long run, is a more comprehensive approach to inhibiting the progression of a cancer.
So do you want to talk a little bit about the cell-to-cell signaling that may go awry in cancer?
Sure. It's kind of interesting in a way. Sometimes I liken cancer to a population, maybe a city population, where there might be stress on the population. There might be economic stress. There might be other kinds of stress. There's friction. In a sense, inflammation occurs. And under that kind of stress, some of the social networks start to break down. Family networks break down. Relationships between groups in the population breaks down. And then what eventually happens is that some people in the population just start to act selfishly, no longer for the community's benefit. So maybe they become, who knows, they rob a bank or they do something that is sort of antisocial in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same sort of thing happens in the body with cancer. cells are exposed to some, for example, they might be exposed to some kind of irritant. That might be a chemical irritant. It might be some other kind of irritant. Inflammation can start, and eventually a transformation can occur in the cells where they start to lose touch. They start to lose communication with the cells around them, and no longer are they acting as a social network. They're acting as individual agents. And once they start to, once enough chemical changes occur that they can act as, or maybe chemical genetic changes occur, that they can act as individual agents, then a cancer can start. And then the cell is really just living for itself. It's trying to get all the, it's trying to grow, it's trying to replicate as often as it can. It's trying to just spread as far as it can. And that essentially is a cancer.
Yeah, and it develops the ability to invade blood vessels and
Exactly. So one of the opportunities when using when trying to affect cancer by multiple mechanisms is to choose look at mechanisms that are involved in cell to cell communication.
Right.
And that's quite interesting because there's some studies that suggest that if you can reestablish some degree of cell communication, then you can actually reduce the aggressiveness of a cancer.
Well, that makes sense. The cell-to-cell communication may be what limits the not only the division of the cell, but also the migratory ability of the cell. I mean, after
right.
all, your liver cells don't migrate over to your spleen.
No, they tend to stay with your liver quite well, right?
Well,
right, unlike cancer, which right. has a tendency to metastasize.
I have a question. Plastic surgery is going toward stem cell research, as you might understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have to get a better, better tissue engineering, and stem cells are one of the things that are on the horizon for research. And I just was wondering what you felt, if anything, do you have an opinion about whether or not we should be using stem cells throughout the population without really knowing what might occur with them in terms of cancer formation?
Oh, well, that's certainly a question of interest. I don't follow that exactly, so I'm not going to be able to say too much about that. Stem cells certainly do represent a large horizon of possibilities for medical treatment in all kinds of ways, really. As a matter of fact, we hope to a degree, use them in our culture system.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if we're going to grow a somewhat realistic tumor culture in our test tubes, stem cells are a way, for example, to generate some of the normal cell types that we might like to use.
So we
hope to take advantage of some of that technology. It's another story completely to be injecting stem cells into a human, hoping to establish a new tissue, repair tissue. But you're quite right. I mean, that has to be done very carefully. It just has to be done very carefully. Certainly a lot of studies are going to be required to figure out where that works and where it doesn't and what the dangers are.
Yeah, and some of the patients that, we're trying to grow breasts on are cancer patients, breast
mm-hmm.
cancer patients specifically.
Yeah.
It's an interesting... I mean, I've always wondered, well, when can you really tell that somebody has gotten over the risk of cancer?
Yeah.
Especially a very slow-growing cancer like breast cancer.
Right.
Is it 10 years out? Well,
sure.
Maybe.
Sure.
Maybe not.
Those are some very good questions, yes.
Yeah, well, I just thought I'd pick your brain on that one if you know anything specific about cancer and stem cells.
Only as it applies to the culture system.
Yeah. So, what is there anything else you'd like to talk about regarding the project?
I would like to mention the webpage again.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of information that we put up, and people might enjoy looking at that. It again is newearthbiomed.org, and we welcome people to visit us there and learn what we're up to. And certainly we would welcome any donations. We're as a nonprofit, we're mm-hmm. trying to establish our funding sources, and it's actually not easy, of course, to even a cancer researcher in a traditional setting is going to have to be very competitive to obtain funding from NIH and other sources. And we're in an unfortunate, difficult situation where we're looking at therapies that are just not typical therapies. The natural products are both, natural products on the one hand, but then even more unusual is mixtures of natural products. So,
we've had quite a bit of success using natural products. I kind of divide them into four categories. One is for the immune system. One's detoxification, one's anti-cancer therapies, and the other is anti-angiogenous therapies, like bindweed extract, which might be one of those weeds in your backyard.
Right, that's right.
But what we do in the Avatar Cancer Center, we get patients that are undergoing chemotherapy and just want to use natural compounds to decrease side effects. And, of course, it's very, very successful at that.
Right.
And then we get patients that don't want to do chemotherapy. They want to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And, basically we try to, do some investigation as to where the cancer is coming from. You know, is it because the patient's got a lot of toxicity, exposure to carcinogens, which sometimes occurs. I study all the patients with breast implant problems. So there's about 30 chemicals, about 10 of which are pretty good carcinogens that they're exposed to. So getting those out might be necessary. We do a lot of spiritual work with doing a lot of forgiveness work and trying to increase the energy in the organ that has a cancer.
Yeah.
Kidneys have to do with relationships. See, you know all this stuff because we're in the medicine. You know, kidneys have to do with relationship, and breasts have to do with nurturing, and sometimes betrayal of that, people who are supposed to be nurturing and protecting you. And each area has, is connected to the chakra and is connected to certain issues. So we work with that. And then we apply kinesiology to figure out which ones are going to work in which categories.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is do it with, tailor it to the patient, but also tailor it to the cancer.
Right.
Both.
Right. Excellent. Yeah, you're sort of at the front end of the clinical side of this, and we're at the front end of the kind of second scientific academic side of this.
Right.
And hopefully, in the end, we will all meet up.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's the eventual goal here.
Well, right now, the FDA does not regulate natural compounds. Is that right?
Not necessarily. If I could go to the FDA today and say, "Hey, I have a natural compound. I think it should be a drug." Well, then the FDA would be, I'm sure, happy to look at the proposal that I make. But most compounds that are going through the drug pipeline are not natural compounds. They're not directly derived from plants.
But I don't see that the FDA has any real way to look at a combination of natural compounds in terms of making it that a drug.
Right. Well, there are already. It's kind of actually quite interesting because in recent years, in the last maybe decade or so, the FDA has produced some rules by which you would follow if you did want to market some natural compounds or a mixture of natural compounds as a drug. So there has been a lot of drug applications for that, and the first drug actually has first approval has actually been made is for a green tea product that is used externally for a certain skin condition. So there's movement in that direction, but the kind of drug that we're envisioning down the road, I don't think the FDA is quite,
prepared.
It's going to take some work to.
Well,
get
that's
that
why I had to do that statistics thing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why that's one of the reasons why we're doing this kind of technically correct and to the best of our abilities to do scientific solid studies to develop a good data on what we're doing. And down the road, then that should serve us well when we talk to the FDA about developing some of these into drugs.
See, I think the best plan would be to get to if you can, I mean, you can't always, but use the a biopsy of the tumor, say in breast cancer, because we get
we
go in and get the cancer, and then take those cells and grow it in your stem cell mixture, and then develop a program from that.
Right. That's one way to. That would be one way to develop patient-specific therapies.
Mm-hmm.
Is to use some sample from the patient's own tumor.
That's actually a patient and a tumor-specific therapy.
Yeah, well, that's right, that's right.
Unless they have more than one kind of cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which does happen. One of my patients, who worked in a she was a secretary in a chemical factory, she had 7 different primary tumors.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? It was just incredible. I couldn't believe it. But anyway, I took care of her. She vowed to me she would never die of cancer. And she didn't. She died of a pulmonary embolus.
Interesting.
During a biopsy.
Oh, boy.
But I thought that was amazing that she didn't die of a cancer. In fact, she fought all of them, and she was cured of all of them, except the last one turned out to be melanoma, that there was no primary on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that we ever saw. I mean, I guess it could be hidden somewhere, but we never saw it. And it had gone to her lung. But she ended up with a lung nodule, and nobody knew what it was, since she'd had colon cancer, kidney cancer, vulvar squamous cell cancer,
wow.
And lung cancer, and a basal cell. So she had, all these different primary cancers that she got cured of. And then one nodule shows up in her lung. It turned out to be melanoma, which was something she'd never had before.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Unfortunate for her.
And I don't know how being a secretary in a chemical plant ties into that, but she always thought it was because she was exposed to the carcinogens.
Yeah. Unfortunately, okay. we're exposed to a wide range of chemicals in the air and water and food today.
Right.
Hormones in the food and...
That's why everybody should have a good detox program just as part of their regular health maintenance program.
And that's why we should all work for a better world, too, a cleaner, better world.
Right, right. So I guess anything else you want to add about the program or your research or anything? Do you have a future book planned?
Writing a book is an enormous ordeal. It took me years to write those books the two books that I previously did.
What's the name of the first one again? It's Cancer and Something. Cancer.
Let's see. It was Cancer and Natural Medicine. That was the first one. And then Natural Compounds and Cancer Therapy
was
the second one. And I imagine that there is another book that's bouncing around in my head that will come out one day, but I want to wait until we have developed some good solid data and we're moving towards some compounds that look to have some clinical promise, and then I think I will have a very good story to tell, because as I said, the approach that we're taking is really, I don't know if there's any more than just a small handful of other groups in this country that are even working along the same lines we're working on. There's certainly, say, within the Chinese medicine community and other communities that use traditional herbal approaches, to talk to folks in those communities and say, hey, do you think it would work if we used combinations of relatively mild agents to affect a disease? Well, that's kind of a no-brainer for them. They go, sure, of course. But in the scientific community, in the drug development community, that is just not the approach that's taken. So we're trying to pave some new roads there. And if we get a little ways down those roads, then I think there'll be a very good story to tell in another book.
Well, that all came out of your training in oriental medicine.
That's right.
That's
right. And, it's foreign. There's a few reasons why it's foreign. I mean, maybe you could say that the culture of it, it's foreign to the culture, perhaps. But, unfortunately, I mean, at least in my view, it's unfortunate that medicine is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of decisions that are made in medicine are made based on whether they're going to make money or not.
Right.
And one of the things that you look at when you're developing drugs, one of the very first questions you have when you find a new compound or someone brings you a new compound, almost before you ask, does it have any effect, you ask, what's the patent status?
Right.
And if it's a compound that you can't patent, that is, you can't get a patent on the structure, mm-hmm. then it's usually not worth even asking whether it works or doesn't work.
Right.
And there's a lot of compounds that are, for example, curcumin mm-hmm. from the turmeric root. Amazing compound. Has all kinds of effects, bioactive effects. Has effects.
I take it
cancer.
Every day.
Yeah, has effects.
I love it.
Cancer and has all
anti-inflammatory.
Sorts of anti-inflammatory, right? It has all kinds of wonderful effects. There's as a matter of fact, there's a professor down at MD Anderson, Bart Agarwal, who was kind enough to be on one of my committees, who is kind of one of the world's leaders on the study of curcumin,
mm-hmm.
and. Compounds like that have been known for a long time. They're common knowledge, so you can't get a patent on their structures. So there's a lot of a compound like that might have been developed into drugs, but it's just not going to happen because you can't get a patent, so it's
right.
not going to financially work out.
Back when radiation was being developed, I think this was at Harvard. There was an orthopedic surgeon that, by the name of Colley, you probably know that he developed Colley's toxins because he noticed that his sarcoma patients who had high fevers from the strep infections that they sometimes got with surgery, sometimes that led to their sarcoma going into remission. So he developed Colley's toxins, which were the toxin from the bacteria, not the bacteria itself, but it caused mm-hmm. the high fever, and he had a really, really good success rate. Probably greater than 50%, I believe, of his patients went into remission with metastatic disease after that. But the problem was at the same time they were developing radiation, and radiation went out because you could charge more for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So that's one example of a very effective treatment that was actually very, I mean, other than the fact that you had high fever and you were sick for a few days, had very low side effects.
Yeah.
I mean, long-term, anyway. Well, radiation sure has long-term side effects.
Right. There's lots of examples that you could come up with on why a particular decision was made in developing a therapy and how money affected that decision. I mean, having medicine as a business, I mean, there is some advantage to that. Maybe in some ways it spurs... Mm-hmm. entrepreneurship and spurs research, perhaps, but at the same time, there's some real negative consequences also. So as a society, I think we need to look at all of those quite with a sober attitude and try to figure out what we really want and what sort of system will work best for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the advent of the cafeteria plans, as long as the patient was able to take some of the supplements off of that, that helped. You know, they mm-hmm. were able to use their cafeteria health plan to pay for some of the supplements. I don't know some of the countries that have socialized medicine. Are you familiar with whether they are more likely to use natural compounds that are less expensive?
I'm not actually. I do know
that they might be.
Yeah, I don't really know, but I do know that there's other countries that incorporate natural medicines and, for example, herbal medicines much more so
right.
than
homeopathics too in Germany.
Yeah. Well, in that sense, America is lagging behind many of the other industrialized countries.
Right. But essentially, the cancer therapy programs that we put people on aren't all that expensive. I mean, the self-pay rates are usually, $200 to $300 a month. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's nothing compared to, that's like the cost of one chemotherapy treatment in some mm-hmm. of the...
Right. Some chemotherapy drugs, they're... enormous fees are charged for them, and
that
doesn't quite seem right either.
Yeah, well, I think that as we look at healthcare costs being absorbed by programs like Medicare and Medicaid and other nationalized programs, you know, if we get into enough dire straits, I think that they may open up treatment, payment of treatments for natural therapies that are proved effective.
That's a key point that you just said, proved effective. And there's a, I mean, we're doing our part to move in that direction. There's other groups also moving in that direction. And I would encourage your listeners to support all of those movements where they can.
Yeah. That's true.
So that one day we have a very solid data showing exactly what's going on here and how these could be useful and how they could be incorporated by the greater society.
Well, one thing Georgia has that I think at least seven other states have, maybe more now, we have a right to treat law. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, no.
California, I don't think, has it. The right to treat law says that the medical boards aren't going to go after physicians who have adequate informed consent and are treating life-threatening diseases with things with scientific merit. So, therefore, a book like yours, who talk about the various how the various things work, like you know all the different things that you mentioned in natural compounds, cancer therapy, are things that we use in our program. So, there is a scientific basis for why they work. And then we give informed consent, and then we're treating a life-threatening condition. So therefore, we're not being pursued, you know, to have people take away our medical license which is an improvement, as you know, because the Texas Medical Board and even California has been pretty brutal on doctors using natural medicine.
Right.
And so that's part of the legal protection exists in the right to treat states. So, you know, when you go forward with your research, you might want to know where those states are.
Sure.
You know, if you want to start doing clinical trials, you want to, you want to make sure your docs are protected.
Right. It'll be, I'm sure it'll be several years before we get around to the point where we're ready to think about clinical trials. We have a lot of work to do, a lot of kind of, in a sense, not very sexy work. You know, it's a lot of just nuts and bolts, putting things together, developing our systems, screening compounds, looking at mixtures, developing models. That tends not to be the things that hit the front page, but it's completely necessary work in order to eventually get to the point where you can make some solid, rational decisions on what should go into a clinical trial and who it might help and all those kind of questions like that.
Well, I'm approaching it from another direction. My interest is in spontaneous remission, explaining what it is and being able to reproduce it. Not all diseases have documented instances of spontaneous remission. I don't know if you're familiar with the Noetic Science book on spontaneous remission. It's 100 cases.
You know, it's a very interesting topic, actually. I don't know if they give a percentage of the. I suppose each cancer, actually, kidney cancer probably has a larger number of spontaneous remission.
Melanoma does too.
Melanoma, yeah. Those would be two. Those would be two cancers that actually respond more to immune to the body's own immune system. So. That might be one reason why there's spontaneous remissions there, but it is quite interesting that for several types of cancers, there's some.
Well, I've had a number of patients have spontaneous remission, and they all tell me the same thing. They say there's a heat wave that they feel that starts at their head and goes through their body, and by the time that heat wave goes through, there's no more cancer. The tumors are all gone.
Interesting.
I mean, yeah, this is. Now, there is the spontaneous remission that occurs. I had it in melanoma patients where they're riddled with cancer. They come in, they've got black tumors everywhere. You send them home, you know. You go, well, come back in 3 months, never expecting to see them, right? Well, they come back in 3 months and they have no cancer anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, those patients are a little bit different because they're more slow. And I believe the slower spontaneous remission occurs too. And it may actually be the immune system kicking back in, like we talked about earlier.
Right.
But this is an energetic spontaneous remission. This is where they all describe the same thing, an energy going from the head to the foot, like a wave of energy going through their body, and then no tumors after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Very interesting.
So, that's been my goal in interviewing all these physicists and picking the best brains in the world on what's going on there.
Yeah.
And then understanding that there's actually things you can do to prevent the energy, unwanted energy intrusions from say, fourth to third dimension, whereas a spontaneous remission is probably coming from a much higher level.
Yeah.
And just flooding the body with energy. And then the question is, what is actually happening when those tumors disappear?
You know, we're not there. We're not there yet as a culture, but hopefully, one day we will be to the place where we are all eating a good, clean diet, maybe a mm-hmm. vegan diet, and preventing cancer from starting. And when diseases do start, and the first thing we look at is maybe some dietary changes, or maybe some energetic work, or something like that.
Right.
And then if that doesn't work, then maybe some mild treatments with natural compounds, maybe the kind of mm-hmm. stuff that I'm looking at. And then if all of those fail, well, then maybe something more heroic, something more potent, like, who knows, surgery or some more potent drug. But that's not the way we do it now. And
now we have the 2x4.
It's just kind of upside. That pyramid has turned upside
down.
One
of my patients yesterday said she had throat cancer, which she survived with radiation and chemo. I think we're just maybe just chemo. Anyway, she said she had so many chemos at once. Her doctor at Emory told her that it'll either kill you or the cancer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
wonderful.
That's not good. Yeah.
No, it isn't. Well, John, thank you very much for being with us this hour. It's been a fascinating talk. If you want to give your website one more time for people?
Sure, thank you. It's www.newearthbiomed.org.
This has been Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing John Boyk on his cancer drug discovery using natural product mixtures. Next week, we're going to interview Jeremy Taylor, The Wisdom of Your Dreams, Using Dreams to Tap into Your Unconscious and Transform Your Life. And what's interesting, John, is that he gives several stories in his book, I've already started the book, on how people discovered they had cancer that otherwise they wouldn't have known about through their dreams.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
That your subconscious can actually tell you that you have cancer so that you can get it treated, say, with a surgery, taking your uterus, one of them was a uterus and one was a kidney, and they just were able to do it with surgery rather than having to have anything else. Then on Christmas, we have David and Linda Freund, who are talking about medical intuition and spiritual healing and the healing gift. And then on the 1st of January, Howard Falco, a book called I Am. And on the 8th, Hunter on infection connections, how short-term foodborne infections can lead to long-term health problems. And this has been Dr. Susan Kalb with John Boyk, Temple of Health Radio Show. Have a great week.